Development Director at Centers for Children and Families.
Together, we're bringing you tips and tricks on how to navigate this thing called life. This is Center Solutions. Due to the nature of some of the topics that are discussed, listener discretion is advised. Hello, friends. Thanks for tuning in today. So we are going to do something a little different. We are starting a new project within Center Solutions called Almost Therapy. And if you are familiar with the show, we typically have a guest, and we've done quite a few episodes now, and some of the episodes that we've done have prompted some questions. So we thought it would be fun to just sit down with Christy and discuss certain topics, and Melanie and I will just kind of chime in with our personal experiences, and Melanie's always great at having really good statistics.
Well, these sessions are going to be almost sort of a coaching sessions by Christy. So it'll be a special way for you to get a little almost therapy, and we'll have different topics.
And to quote Christy, we were talking earlier, she says, "You millennials love life coaching." And she's not wrong. So
I'm not wrong about that.
You're not wrong. Right. So yeah, it's kind of interesting because it's like, so a millennial, a boomer, and a Gen Xer walk into a bar.
Wait, are we going to a bar?
Yeah. Alcohol?
All right. So today let's talk about feeling stuck in life. And I think everyone can relate to this. I know I go through that often. Mm-hmm. What about you, Christy? How do you, you're a therapist and you've been a therapist most of your life. Right. What do you do when you feel stuck?
Well, sometimes I don't even recognize that I'm stuck. You know, so I'll go along a few days and I'm like, you know, I just know that I'm off or something. Then I'll realize, wait, I am doing the same thing, you know, whether it's in my professional life or my personal life. You know, a lot of times at night, I'll go home and take off my makeup. We'll eat some dinner, walk the dogs, sit down, watch TV, do nothing. And then at some point you realize, okay, so I've done this for like 5 or 6 straight days. What does that mean? Am I on autopilot or am I truly stuck? You know, and sometimes you're on autopilot because you're busy and that's just your routine. And sometimes that's comforting. When you recognize it's stuck is whenever you look up one day and you realize you didn't want to be there and that you didn't recognize that you were there.
Right. So I think there are different ways, like, for example, stress from work, some people that are experiencing a lot of burnout. Mm-hmm. I think in our area right now, that's such a common thing. What do you hear anytime somebody says, how are you doing? People are like, I'm fine, just really
busy.
Mm-hmm. And so that's part of it because we become trapped in these daily routines of work and fitting too many things in our schedule or whatever the case is. And I think could be a relationship rut or, I mean, there's all kinds of different ways that you can feel stuck.
Well, and I'm just going to say, you know, the caution here has to be, is it something that's a comforting thing for you when you are busy and stressed out? Because there's a difference. That's not a rut, or that's not stuck, or that's not burned out. It's just.
Is that also procrastination?
It could be procrastination. Sometimes procrastination saves our mental health.
Yes.
Right? Because if you're not fully ready to jump in there, it's better to not go there, right? Mm-hmm. So what you have to recognize is, okay, I'm in a rut with this relationship. It doesn't bring me joy. It's not anything that I look forward to. I do it because that's what I've done. Mm-hmm. Okay. So if you can't step back and say, you know, I'm not Marie Kondo or whoever it is, does this bring me joy? But it is like, what is the payoff for me for what I'm doing right here? Is it works for me right now because I'm really busy at work and I don't want to have to think about anything else? Or is this relationship just kind of on autopilot because we're trying to make a decision whether to go forward or not? So once again, if there's a benefit to you about it with it, it's okay to be there. It's whenever it's not, it's whenever you're avoiding making a move because you don't want to make the decision. Mm-hmm. That's when you're stuck. You can't make a decision and you just sit on it.
And sometimes do you stay in that position because of all these outside factors? Like, you know, I have a good career. I need to do this for my kids. Oh. So what do you do whenever you're like, but this career is not fulfilling my soul. This career is not doing it for me anymore.
Well, and sometimes that's just what it is. That's what you're doing because that's the place that you are. But for me, I'm always like, you bring out the old pen and paper, draw a line down the middle, and do the pros and cons, right? Is this, and then you say, is this where I thought I'd be at this point? Where is it that I'd really, where would I rather be? And what are the steps to doing that? So sometimes it's just a refresher to be grateful for what you have. Because sometimes, you know, when you're going, I feel stuck in this job, feel stuck in this career. I don't really have anything going. You know, it's not bringing me joy. It's not bringing me fulfillment. But sometimes you're just going, I'm not stuck. I'm just, what is the word I'm looking for? It's like, you know, whenever your wheat field is just like not turning over anything, but you're fallow, I think is what the word is.
Stagnant.
This is just a point in my life whenever I just need to be kind of on autopilot.
Uh-huh, right. I'm okay right now.
But if it's truly not where you want to be and you have the ability to move forward, or you want to set that goal out there and make sure that every so often you're making a step towards that goal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do I need more education? Do I need to live in a different place? You know, answer all those questions.
So is this like the gratitude versus the greener grass list?
That's the gratitude versus, you're exactly right, Melanie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think sometimes there are other ways outside of, I mean, if you just can't, there are a lot of other things you can do. One thing I think we do in today's world is we get really trapped in our phones or our Netflix shows. Mm-hmm. And I think that has something to do with the feeling of being stuck. Mm-hmm. I can tell you, I mean, I have some friends who are millennials, but mostly I think about my single friends who will talk about being, becoming a little accidentally, socially, well, like isolated.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Maybe it wasn't with intention, but it just mm-hmm. kind of becomes comforting not to push yourself out, and then it's hard to get out there. And so that's another way of getting stuck, I think.
I agree.
It's just,
Melanie does a great job right now, I think, in her own life of staying connected to people that, you know, are her friends, whether they're married, single, male, female, whatever. When she came on board at Centers, she made a lot of us sit back and go, wait a minute, what are we doing? We're so obsessed with work, or, you know, we're going home and doing nothing. And where is that social connection? Because we're creatures of social connection.
Mm-hmm.
Everything we do to feel like a human being has to do with, you know, a sense of belonging. And
I think part of that too, though, is the fact that I'm not married.
And maybe
I think that makes a difference,
right?
Because I mean, I have been married and I'm familiar with that whole routine.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I think if I weren't feeling connected, I'd be very constantly aware of feeling alone, maybe. Not that I'm busy. I've got kids and we're all busy, but there's just something about that, I think. Is there?
Oh no, there's something
you're
about
the expert.
That. No, I'm not the expert on that.
Yeah.
But yes, whenever you're married, it's easier to be a little more withdrawn from that because you're getting that social connection with your husband.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you've got kids at home, you're doing things with your kids, which automatically brings you in contact with other people.
Sure.
But I'm talking about that purely selfish, I am with this person or these group of people because I connect with them. Whether you go shopping, whether you go out of town together, whether you play in a, you know, bunco, whether you play tennis, whatever it is, that it's not because it's a requirement. It's not because I'm a mom or a wife or an employee. It is by choice. And that's the part that I think is super important, that sometimes that's the first thing that goes when we get busy or we get stuck.
I agree.
And you have to unstuck yourself. Unstuck yourself?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, we're unstucking. So I have a friend.
if you can say that.
Hashtag unstuck yourself.
Unstuck yourself.
Yeah. You can say that every time without the Freudian slip.
Not sure I could. So I have a friend that every year or so, she calls 20 people that she hasn't seen in that year.
Huh.
And she invites them to lunch or to dinner or to a movie or to a play or something like that because they're important people in her life. But because we lead busy lives, she loses connection. So she has figured out a way to unstuck herself, right?
Mm-hmm.
By reaching out.
I think that makes a difference. Mm-hmm. I know that's important to me. And of course, we all get in those same ruts
mm-hmm.
where I feel like, gosh, I miss hanging out with friends. Mm-hmm. I think the tendency, though, and what maybe keeps us stuck, I don't want to blame everything in the world on social media, but I think we do see each other on mm-hmm. social media.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of this false security that our friends are there and we can, you know, hole up in our house and not really have to worry about it because we still have some connect with them. Mm-hmm. But there really is something different about having that personal time mm-hmm. with people in your life. Mm-hmm. And I think it does help spark joy.
It does.
Do something in that little special chemical part in your brain mm-hmm. that, you know, wants to connect with others.
Especially as girls, whenever we go do something with our girlfriends, we almost always greet them with a hug. We always end with a hug. So, you know, what we know through years and years of studies is that, you know, your serotonin levels go up just by human touch. And so that just makes you just overall feel lighter and happier. So that's not what an iPad or a computer or a TV watching something on Netflix. That's not going to do it. While you might enjoy that, that might be a form of escapism. You know, you're not just sitting, mm-hmm. staring at the wall. It's not the same.
I'll tell my girls, I'm like, why are we watching people live?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Let's live.
Having a life of
our
own.
Watch people live.
Agree.
So what are your thoughts on journaling? Do you encourage people to journal or to, if you do encourage them, what are some of your techniques for journaling?
Okay. So this is what I do. I think journaling is awesome. Can I just say, it's awesome. I sound like I was 15 years old just now.
Okay.
Journaling doesn't have to be, you know, originally whenever it was brought out as a therapeutic tool, it was like, you know, you've got to write all this stuff in there. I will start people out with something as simple as a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being you're deliriously happy, almost delusional, mm-hmm. and 1 being it was a really bad day. So you can just get your calendar, your planner on your phone or whatever. Nobody has to know what that scale means, but it's just a way of tracking. Are there days that I have better, you know, and what, maybe Wednesdays I always seem to be gloriously happy. So what's going on Wednesday? And, you know, randomly Fridays are the day that I have the hardest day. So you start looking at, you know, what is your sleep schedule like? What is your diet like? Who are you interacting? You know, what's going on? So simple as a scale 1 to 10, or simple as a frowny face, a smiley
That's
face.
That's really good. Yeah. That's like a joy scale.
Mm-hmm. It's a joy scale, yeah.
I think about my kid that has migraines, and we've been trying to, okay, let's write down the day that you have the bad one mm-hmm. or when we can stop it. It's pretty much the same. Mm-hmm. So I can see it having a really good result because you can go back and say, well, I slept for 8 hours that mm-hmm. night.
Yes.
Yeah.
I like that because journaling for me, I struggle with journaling because I think, I don't know, Melanie, if you said this or it was one of our guests, they said, it just feels like another job for me when I get
that
home, like homework,
yeah,
right?
For sure. And at first I was great.
Right.
And I'm like, oh my gosh, I didn't have
right.
time to journal.
Right. You know? And then you're like, oh, I didn't journal today. And then you're like frustrated because you didn't, you know, set aside time to go journal. But like you're saying, Christy, if it's just a smiley face, you're like, today was a good day.
Or get some stickers.
Yeah, it was a 7.
Yeah. You know, and you don't have to go more than that. But, you know, especially if you want to, like whenever we're trying to track their sleep cycles and, you know, what goes on, and we look at mm-hmm. sleep hygiene. So we look at, you know, what did you do? Did you work out right before you went to bed? Did you drink caffeine? Did you eat, you know, high spice foods? You know, did you, you know, look at your tablet or whatever? Mm-hmm. So it's the same thing. You want to know what made that day better that is not obvious to you, mm-hmm. you know? Like if you got asked out on a date by the guy you been wanting to date for a long time, that's obviously going to be a, you know, high. But just on a, you know, if you can go back and pinpoint that, or you can say, I lost my job on that day.
Right.
But
or even diet.
Diet, yes.
Yeah, we've talked about a healthy body means mm-hmm. a healthy mind. So you can say, you know, why did I feel so bad? Why was that mm-hmm. day a 3? Mm-hmm. And you can look back and say, oh, well, I went through McDonald's or something, mm-hmm. you know, compared to the diet that I was on. Yeah. So,
or even sometimes it might be what you ate the night before.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
The next day.
So what we want people to recognize is, am I self-sabotaging? Am I making myself stay stuck?
Am I making myself suck?
Give us some self-sabotage tips, because I think sometimes I do that.
Okay.
For sure.
Okay.
Who doesn't, right?
I always feel like I trip myself going downhill.
Oh,
and it's,
yeah,
you know,
me
that's,
too.
Should just be able to roll, right? Mm-hmm. Not tripping. Okay. So self-sabotage is basically when you're telling yourself all the while you're moving to do that you shouldn't be doing that. And there's all the reasons and you do it anyway. And I'm just going to use an example because we were talking about a healthy body. It's like somebody brought donuts to work today. The whole time, every time I walk by the break room, there's that box of donuts, and I'm just like, I'm not going to do it. And then for some reason, I found myself, well, you know, because the donuts were in there, found myself going in there, and I just grabbed one and ate it. And afterwards, I'm like, really? You went all day. The day is almost over. You were able to talk yourself out of doing that. And whatever it is, it's a weak moment, or surely there's none left. They just left the box there. You know, you're hoping. Mm-hmm. So you have the insight to know that what you're about to do is not good for you. Hmm. And you fight it and you fight it and then you give in. So, you know, it's one of those things that's where you really have to give yourself that self-talk. You're not going. Don't even go down the hall. Don't go by the break room. Don't go in the break room. You know, if you eat a donut, you're going to feel bad about yourself. So it's a lot of it. You know, I always talk on here about how hard the cognitive work is. The behavioral work is easy. I'm going straight down there and getting a donut and I'm going to eat it and whatever. Mm-hmm. So that's, but the trying to not allow yourself to do those kind of things.
I try to think about, try, not always, but how, mm-hmm. How much is the return?
Yes.
The ROI for whatever you're doing, because mm-hmm. I know, are you going to just feel bad about, because I know for me, if I do something, if I make a mistake, I will beat myself up about it. Mm-hmm. It's not even worth it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just, I will beat myself up about it forever, mm-hmm. even if it's just something small.
So. And we all do those things like not responding to your alarm after you've been written up at work for being late to work. I'm just going to, you know, mm-hmm. and you just turn it off and you just turn it off. And somehow, you know, it's not that you're lazy because you get up and you go to work. You're just a little bit late or whatever, but because it's become an issue and yet you still do that. That is like self-sabotage. Mm-hmm. It is, you know, and yet you just keep ignoring it. And another example would be like a teenager who, you know, gets their phone back and they're like, okay, you have to be on time for your curfew, you know, because kind of on trial here, and they go out with their friends, and all the while they know, and they're telling themselves, you know, got to be on time, but something happens and all of a sudden it just doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those, it's a constant, it's that creating that self-discipline when you don't want to. Mm-hmm. That's how you stay off the self-destruct
button. It's a lot easier to give in. It's so much easier just to give in to that donut,
donut, yes.
Right.
It is.
You can condition your brain and you can rewire your brain, but it's exhausting.
It's exhausting.
It really is, yeah. But it's worth it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you always hear life coaches or people on TV who are really good at public speaking and seem happy all the time. I think they have to work at it every day too. I think when the cameras are off it's a constant battle. You have to constantly start replacing those positive thoughts mm-hmm. with, you know, from those negative thoughts. You mm-hmm. have to start telling your brain, look, we're not going to allow those negative thoughts in here.
Right.
And it's something, it's hard to do every day because it's easier just to give in, and it's easier to be lazy. It's mm-hmm. easier to not go out. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's a shift in my generation. Is it's hard for me to get my friends to go out. When you see the memes on Facebook that says, "Oh yeah, I'd rather stay in my pajamas."
I see that too.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's strange because yes. that was not a thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but I do recognize it, and I recognize it. I don't even know. I think it's more of a cultural shift anymore because I know that's the same thing with my friends, of mm-hmm. course, especially single girlfriends, it's just easier to hole up and not go mm-hmm. anywhere. Not and it really is a thing.
Right.
Where it's too much effort mm-hmm. and it's just more comfortable. You don't have to worry about the...
Yeah, people seem to not get out of their comfort zones very mm-hmm. often anymore.
I agree. And what we know is to live your full potential and be your happiest requires you to do some of these things. You know, you've got to go do things that you enjoy that are outside, raising your family, even though those things bring us joy, and going to work and doing whatever. It's like you're making a choice at that point to take off your bra and your makeup
mm-hmm.
and watch Netflix, or to go do something, mm-hmm. you know, join a board, volunteer somewhere, phone a friend to go have, you know, a Coke or ice cream somewhere. But it's that, we're required almost to find things that uplift us.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's hard. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because you count on other people.
It takes
effort.
It takes effort. Mm-hmm. And that's where you're doing, you're playing that little game in your mind of the checklist of, is it worth it or is it not?
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't have to get ready. I don't have to have a little bit of anxiety, which I think could also be shifted into anticipation if you were looking forward to going out and seeing people.
Mm-hmm. True.
But you can trap yourself into not. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know I could easily get that way. I think it's nature, but I try really hard not to.
Right.
Because I know that would put me in a really bad stuck rut that would be not good for me. So,
and I see, I go back to social media. It's a common denominator in almost all of our episodes that we've had. I see it just with my friends that I don't like that society is saying it's okay to stay in bed and not go out with your friends. Mm-hmm. I don't like that. I'm like, you have to try new things. You have to do things that scare you to death because it could, you never know. It could be a great thing that you, but it's just, I see this shift, like you're saying, Melanie, and it's hard for me as someone who enjoys going out a lot. I don't like to use introvert, extrovert, because I think anyone can be either one of those things given the situation. But when you're the one who's trying to encourage people to go out or to do things or like not even spend money, let's just go hang out, come over. I don't know. What do you do when you just hit that brick wall where everyone's like, no, I'm just
going
to.
That's when you, I don't know. I tend to be the organizer a lot. That's just in my nature of stuff like that. So I don't know. I think maybe it's time to meet new people that are, they're more in tune with that idea. But I do think if I had, there are so many times that I look back and I think the old saying is true, you know, you'll only regret the things you didn't try. One of the things I like to look at is I did this thing. The organization I used to work for did a fundraiser where you could rappel over a building.
Mm-hmm.
That seemed actually terrifying and crazy to me, but I did it. I didn't give myself a second to think about it. I just thought, I'm just going to do it. I'm going to trust it. I'm going to trust that I'm not going to be squashed flat on the highway or on the road.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I did it. And I think it's so great that I did it. And I look back, if I hadn't done it, it would bother me.
Mm-hmm.
And I would think, I could have just done that, you know. I just, and that's not, it's not, has no real bearing on my life or anything, but it is something that I can feel proud that I at least had the courage to try.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that has a little to do with some of that. I mean, I don't know. Just in that, that's not for everybody, but whether it's signing up for a walk or a 5K or just going, I think for some people, it's just getting out of your house.
Yes.
You know,
totally agree. You know, it, when we're talking about this, I'm thinking about my own personal situation. Whenever our youngest child left, because we had been so busy for like all of these years with, you know, sports and whatever activities. And then you realize we don't have anything we have to do today. So for a while, you're like, whew, we don't have anything we have to do today. So we're going to come home. We're going to be able to cook dinner. We're going to be able to whatever. But then that turns into, we have nothing to do today.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes people, you know, don't get active. Don't become an active participant in their own lives. And they sit there waiting for someone to call them to invite them, you know, and then sometimes people are like, well, I called you the last six times, you know, to go do something. So you've got to, I read something earlier today that said this couple, after their kids left, they took a mason jar and took tongue depressors and on it wrote things that they could do.
Hmm.
And every once in a while, they, you know, if they had been sitting doing nothing for long enough, they just went and got that and pulled it out. And whatever it was, they had to go do it.
That's neat.
Isn't that a cool idea?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's kind of like, you know.
And
like
it's something to look forward to.
Something to look forward to, whether it's going to be date night, whether you're going to go. I mean, there are things you can drive to from here. I thought my parents are 84 and 89. They went on a date to the Settles.
Oh my gosh. Hotel. I was just going to say the Settles. I'll take
Yes.
I have taken my daughters there
in
the summertime. Their pool is so neat.
Yeah.
And they have little cabanas and you can, we just bring a whole bunch of junk food. It's Big Spring.
Oh, Big Spring.
Big Spring. Okay. Yeah. It's, I mean, it's an hour away. Mm-hmm. You know, you can, it doesn't have to be anything big, you know. Can drive to Lubbock to go shopping and take a trip down to San Angelo to look at the cute little shops, have a picnic on the, you know, the Concho River or whatever. So, you know, go backpacking somewhere, and they don't have to be even that big. Mm-hmm. It can be we're going to get up and go to the farmer's market. You know, we're going to try, you know, go to a different church unless you're already, you know, connected to a church. It could be we were best friends with these people. They live, you know, here in Midland. We haven't seen them for 10 years. We're going to call them. We're going to do something fun. So it is, you know, write some things down, set mm-hmm. some goals, what you would like to do.
Don't you think part of, well, we talked a little bit about the book, The Happiness Project.
Yes.
I even had a little book club going with that for a while. But Gretchen Rubin, she's the author, and she's a lawyer, and she didn't have anything really negative at the time. She just felt stuck. She was looking for the joy and started studying happiness. And one of the things I gathered from her book is part of the joy is the anticipation of it. Mm-hmm. So I think that's neat. When you are a little kid and your parents have a trip planned or, you know, Christmas is coming, part of the happiness is knowing, oh, Christmas is coming, mm-hmm. you know, and you see everything start to change and your house gets decorated. And so there's a preparation. So I think there's something to having those things planned with your friends or mm-hmm. with family members that you can look forward to, because I think when you don't have anticipation, it takes some of that joy away. Mm-hmm. I swear I think that has to do with, we think Netflix, I thought it was so cool that you could watch a whole series, you didn't have to wait.
Agree.
But used to, yes. we had to like wait.
Yes. That's a great example.
And you were like, you know, they'd have this moment, it was a very cliffhanger, and mm-hmm. you're like, oh, I can't wait to see what's going to happen. Yeah. So you had something to look forward to next mm-hmm. week. You weren't like, well, I'm going to go get a snack and then I'm going to come back and see what happened. Yeah. I mean, mm-hmm. that's what it is now.
Yeah. I totally agree.
It's taken a big chunk of the whole joy process away. Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. When we've done that to ourselves.
We have done that to ourselves. Netflix did it.
Yeah.
This is another, you know, thing I'd like to caution people about. If you wait mm-hmm. to find your anticipation at, you know, the thing that you anticipate the most, at some point, all those things have fallen away. And then you turn around and you're like, okay, now what? So it's like, if you always say, I will do that when I retire, or mm-hmm. I will do that when the kids are grown, right. or I will do that when we have a little more money,
right.
or, you know, all those things. That's self-sabotage. That is saying, I don't deserve that for some reason. I don't have time for that right now. And then when you do, maybe it's not even as important as it was at time. So you have to do it.
Yeah. I'm currently going through that right now. It scares me to death to, let's say I'm 70. And to look back and say, I never did that. Mm-hmm. I never tried it. Mm-hmm. I never moved. I never, you know, something like that. I don't know. I have an interesting story. A lot of people don't know, but, I grew up as a race car driver. Like I grew up racing cars. So for me to make that switch in my life to work in an office and
that is extreme.
It's extreme.
It is extreme.
And so, I'm sure other people have extremes too, that they're like, man, I used to be, I don't know, a professional singer or something. Right. And now I'm just working in an office. Mm-hmm. So I kind of, going back to journaling, I've noticed this shift in my life about every 5 years. It seems that I get stagnant every 5 years, and that 5 year mark comes up and I'm like, I've got to do something else mm-hmm. because this is not working for me. Mm-hmm. Relationship wise, work wise. And society says, you're supposed to stay at a job for like 30 years. That's mm-hmm. what you're supposed to do. So like, you can't switch jobs.
I disagree with that. yes. I understand the whole concept of, because I feel like that's almost in my nature. I want to grow and change. And mm-hmm. I know that it's a funny thing because there was a time when that was looked upon as that's mm-hmm. loyalty.
Flatty.
And that's how
yeah.
it is, you know. And yeah. But at some point, people that were loyal were not getting, they were getting the short end of the stick. And so I think, you know, the corporate world kind of had some part in the distrust of staying anywhere too long and people mm-hmm. going and looking elsewhere because are you really, you're, you know, the days of great pensions and stuff
right.
are no
gone.
Longer.
Right.
That's true.
So you kind of got to, there's this whole looking out for yourself and which, you know, you have to do that too. But for one, you're not working in an office. You're working in a nonprofit
right.
organization that helps people. And so that's
yeah, it goes along with
that. I think
that,
it's so much
right.
way more easier to find some fulfillment in than if
yeah.
you were just.
Oh, yeah, that's why I'm in
yeah.
it, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I love my job. I don't want it to sound like
but it's from a race car driver.
Right. It's hard when you have
you don't have that adrenaline surge.
Right. And see, I have like an adrenaline problem, obviously. Mm-hmm. So that's why I'm like not a homebody. I'm like,
mm-hmm. So you should have went over the edge on the building.
Yeah. Next time that comes up, we need to get Bailey signed up for that.
But see, there's nothing in Midland where I can try to pursue that career, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like, for me, I'm like, what do I need to do right now? What do I need to do to make things work right now?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's why I went into nonprofit. I was like, I love to help people, and I'm using my degree kind of in that sense, and it just felt like an appropriate career at the time. But like other people who have these dramatic life experiences or something that they want to do,
what would you recommend would you recommend to Bailey?
Yes.
So I'm sitting here formulating. So like, okay. If I was your therapist,
right.
These are some of the things that I would be saying to you right now.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I would say, and I say this all the time on this podcast, developmentally, we go through certain stages and phases that whether we like it or not, we're going to go through, mm-hmm. right? So part of, I think, whatever, you reach a certain age and you go, oh, I probably don't need to be driving race cars. I probably should be doing something that's a little more responsible, maybe make a little more money. And we spent all this money on my degree. I probably need to be doing something like that. And you have landed in a place that seems to suit you.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing I would say would be you can't wait for that shift every 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So knowing that about yourself, you would have to say, what am I going to do year one to have some satisfaction with where I am and what I'm doing? I don't want to wait for that 5 year slump to come around and go, oh, I need to make a major change. So you're going to be looking for ways to be satisfied or make small changes along the way. So when you hit 5 years, you don't have to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm saying. That is being stuck kind of on its own. And you're going to take charge and you're going to figure out a way when year five comes around, because I paid attention in year one, two, three, and four, year five means nothing anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So I am now skydiving, or I am going whitewater rafting, mm-hmm. or I've taken up horseback riding, yeah. or, you know, I'm flying to exotic places because I love to, you have a journalism degree, right?
Right. Communication. Yeah.
Communication.
Yeah. With a journalism background. Yeah, right.
So, you know, I like to go do this. So maybe I'm going to start sending some articles about places I've been,
mm-hmm.
or something like that. So those are some of the things that I would say as a therapist, just to help you.
That's awesome. Yeah.
And I definitely go through phases, although I feel like I need to learn how to play the piano, or I need to learn how to, you know, it's almost this panic that I didn't get this stuff accomplished. I'm like, well, I need to do this stuff.
And this is what I say all the time. You can learn to play the piano online now. Get yourself a little electronic keyboard, and in your spare time.
I have an actual piano.
Oh,
no one can play it.
Then you watch some of those things, or take a lesson or two.
Right.
That's human interaction.
Right.
And that requires you to pay attention, because wait, I'm paying so-and-so $35 every Thursday for my 45-minute or 30-minute mm-hmm. lesson. So you're going to be doing it, and then you're going and you're going to be interacting, and then you're anticipating that you're going to be doing something, all the things that we've talked about.
There are mm-hmm. silly ruts you can get into. Like, one thing that I'm happy that I do regularly that is pretty easy for me to do is I run. Almost every day. Every now and then I'll skip a day on the weekend, but I mm-hmm. run. It's important to my mental health.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes I feel like, oh, this run, you know, it's just the same thing because I'm not switching it up at all. And I start mm-hmm. thinking, okay, do I need to start doing something different or mm-hmm. run a little bit more? So I feel like no matter what, even if it's a good habit, you can start feeling kind of stuck in it mm-hmm. no matter what.
So once again, what you're doing is you're creating new neural pathways.
Oh, yay. The important terminology.
Whenever you do something different. Okay. If I live straight up Midland Drive and then I go straight up back the other way to work, you know, so it's just one of those things. Every once in a while, I'll just take a little side street, or I'll go too far out this way to wind my way back through a neighborhood and drives my husband crazy. It's like, what are we doing now? Yeah. I'm like, I'm creating new neural pathways.
Oh.
So changing something up, adding a different block in, or
brush your teeth with your left hand.
Yeah. Or, you know, whatever way, whatever you run, if you run outside, you go where you normally finish, you'll start there and go the back way.
I try to do that when I'm outside, but.
You're on your treadmill.
That's kind of the whole.
Yeah, don't go backwards on your treadmill.
Yeah, don't go backwards.
But oh, I have fallen on my treadmill. It's not pretty sight. I'm just glad there was nobody there to catch it on camera.
And put it on TV. Yeah, but so it's all about, you know, it's everything that you add to the brain is, it's another route for you to not be stuck. So every, you know, thinking about playing the piano, or maybe, you know, that's something I might like to do. I'd like to even at least be able to play Christmas carols. Mm-hmm. That's all I remember from 8 years of piano lessons years ago. But, you know, it's like, okay, that's fun. I really want to do that. Or, I don't know, just whatever you, your daughter's in theater, maybe you might want to try out for an, you know,
oh,
one of those.
She's always, I'm like, no, I don't know. I have no talent, but thank you, though.
Or you might just say, sure, I'll do that.
But I think that's my way of when I feel myself in a rut, I start wanting to do things like that, mm-hmm. or go hike somewhere, mm-hmm. or start training for a race. Mm-hmm. I can sense that about myself, mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. Something's, and I guess that's just people, right?
Sure.
I
mean, but pay attention. If you're keeping your calendar that's got your happy face or whatever it is, your scale, that you're going to go, okay, I've noticed that I'm looking for something to motivate me, you know, and just make a note today because I'm thinking I want to run the Boston Marathon. I'm very motivated, but in reality, I'd like to just do whatever it might be.
I mean, are you going to look back on your life and say, I ran the Boston Marathon? Are you going to look back and say,
I would.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd be so excited if I did that.
Right.
Unless that was the end of my life.
When you crawled across.
Darn it, I ran the Boston Marathon. Should have done that.
But it's all of, it has to be about taking you out of what your normal everyday routine is. Something that brings you enjoyment, even if it's not delirious joy. We all do this. I mean, let's just say we went to a concert with friends and we didn't really want to go. We came home and go, that was so much fun. Mm-hmm. I had so much fun. Why don't we do this more often? So quit asking yourself, why don't we do this more often and make it happen more often?
Just do things.
It doesn't have to be major.
Find somebody that's going to do things.
Right.
Definitely.
Yes.
Just do it.
Don't sue us,
Nike.
I do not want to be on, I know I don't want to be on my deathbed going,
right,
wow, I watch a lot of Netflix, mm-hmm. or, you mm-hmm. know,
right.
That sounds scary to me. Yeah. Like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes you read obituaries. I don't want to make this morbid, but you know, it's like they hiked, they hunted, they fished, they.
Oh my gosh.
If you've ever read
the New York Times obituaries, I feel like they just make me feel bad about life because I'm like, these people are living everything you read in there. And I'm sure the writing is amazing mm-hmm. anyway, but it is inspiring. I just think, okay, I need to make a list of the things I want to do and just do them and not wait for mm-hmm. anybody to join me, but just go and do these things.
And let's don't stuck ourselves.
Right.
By saying, I'm too old. I don't have enough money. I can't take off time from work. You know, whatever it might be, unstuck yourself by saying, I'm going to figure out these are a priority. And within this next week, I'm going to make some small step towards that goal.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just keep going and pretty soon you're doing it and then you're unstuck.
I'm excited. Yeah. I'm going to start unstucking myself right away.
So
or stop stucking. I'm going to unstuck myself. I said that wrong. Let's scratch that.
So you guys heard a lot of our personal stories. By the way, what's something really exciting that you've done in your life that you can look back and say, I went skydiving, I went whatever.
Okay, I didn't do anything like that. I don't even like to get in an airplane.
That's okay.
I think one of the things that, it's like things that I did when I was younger that then there was a time that I did not do them, you know, like water skiing, snow skiing, some of those things. It's like whenever your kids call and they were like, you're going to get in an airplane. We're going to go fly somewhere. And I don't like to fly. So it's not anything, it's not anything huge, but you know, this is the little things that you do that are things that you would not have done had you chosen to watch Netflix
mm-hmm.
or
what
to go home.
What would you share?
I'm trying to think of anything. I've not done anything so exciting.
I think the coolest story to me that I know about you is when you went to get your, when you went to become a therapist.
Well, that's true.
I think that's great. Yes. 'Cause you could have said no to that.
I could have, you're right.
You could have said, well, that's how I want to do that, but I'm comfortable. And
that is true. Because I was working, my initial degree was in accounting, and I was working in accounting for Clayton Williams. Mm-hmm. And while I enjoyed my job and all the people I worked with, it just was not what I felt like I should be doing. It didn't bring me joy. Mm-hmm. I did a good job, but I just remember that always my friends, my high school guidance counselor said, you need to be a therapist. And then one day I just woke up and said, I'm going to do it. And so I quit my job, went back to college, became a therapist. And yeah, it's been my greatest joy.
I can't think of a better story because how many people have you gone on to help? And if you hadn't, how many lives would be affected?
That's true.
I mean, you were able to positively and still have been able to positively affect so many people's lives because you went and did it.
Right. I didn't just keep saying the paycheck. So thank you, Melanie.
Yeah.
So I did do something.
And I think that's a great example. It doesn't have to be going and getting into a fast car. It doesn't have to be that. It can be the small things like that that really made a difference in your life.
Yeah.
And we want to hear your stories also. So maybe eventually we'll go on Facebook Live. We talked about maybe doing this live. But the point of all of this is we want your interaction too. We want our listeners to communicate with us with questions that you might have for Christy that she can answer on the show, and maybe some topics that you would like for us to discuss. So please contact us on email, Facebook, any way. Mm-hmm.
Also, I have books.
Okay, and you have books to recommend.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was part of my homework that you gave. So one of these going along with the stuck and unstuck, it's called Stuck, Why We Can't or Won't Move On. And that's one that I have read and I have used. And then The Art of Letting Go. And that's been around for a long time. So that's both of those I can highly recommend.
Make sure to follow us on social media and SoundCloud so that you can hear the follow-up to this episode, where Christy, Melanie, and I will tell you how our daily journals are going, and we can all talk about some things that maybe we can cut out of our daily routine. The follow-up to this episode, where we talk about our journaling, is called Almost Therapy, Light Therapy, and Seasonal Affective Disorder. The books that Christy recommends, which are available on Amazon, are Stuck, Why We Can't or Won't Move On, by Anneli Rufus. The book that Melanie recommended was The Happiness Project by Gretchen Rubin. And The Art of Letting Go, A Pathway to Inner Freedom by Vidya Frazier. That's V-I-D-Y-A Frazier, F-R-A-Z-I-E-R. Make sure to subscribe to our SoundCloud page so you can stay up to date on all the newest episodes. Center Solutions is a production of the Recording Library of West Texas. Post-production work is done by Bailey Hennis and Abby Wiggum. Content is provided by Melanie Size and Christy Edwards. Contact Centers for Children and Families at 432-570-1084 or the Recording Library, 432-682-2731. Email Melanie with questions you want answered on the show at msize@centerstexas.org. That's msize@centerstx.org. Both nonprofits are on all social media platforms. See you next time.
To bring us up to time for our next regularly scheduled program, we now bring you the following informative feature.
This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by the Georgia Radio Reading Service. Hello, I am Herbert Gilmore, and this is Prevention Magazine. I'll be reading articles for the December 22nd episode of Prevention Magazine. And the first article is Everything You Need to Know About mRNA, the COVID-19 Vaccine's Secret Weapon by Carolyn Delbert. Two mRNA vaccines from Pfizer and Moderna are nearing final approval, and both work by rewiring a genetic trigger. SARS-CoV-2, the novel virus that causes COVID-19, has a unique physical structure that can be used to prime immune response. An mRNA vaccine has never been approved before, but other mRNA drugs exist. After a remarkably accelerated development period, two experimental COVID-19 vaccines are almost ready for prime time. Both use a technology called messenger RNA, mRNA, which can be studied and experimented with for decades in different forms, but has never been used in a commercial vaccine. Pfizer and Moderna, the companies behind the two most promising mRNA vaccines, are building on years of research, as well as growing track records with some complex and cutting-edge therapies for other health conditions. So what is mRNA, and will the experimental tech actually be the secret weapon that saves the world from the coronavirus? What is mRNA? So-called messenger genetics do just what they say on the tin: deliver genetic information to parts of your body, usually in order to override or erase the genetic information that's already there. Your body naturally makes and uses mRNA already. It's one of the three kinds of ribonucleic acid, RNA, that all work together to translate pure genetic deoxyribonucleic acid, DNA, information into proteins in your body. It takes scientists decades to identify this specific mechanic and turn it into medicine. Think of DNA as a read-only file on your computer. Let's say you pop in and install CD-ROM for Microsoft Word 2000 in your Windows XP PC in 2001. When a disk runs, it copies all the files you need into your computer and the original files are untouched. Or when someone shares a Google Drive file, you must copy the file before you can update it. This is how RNA transcribes DNA instructions into the first steps of expressing those genes in your body. That means the right kind of therapeutic chemical interference can trick your body into believing the DNA says something different than it actually does. Think of the kinds of virtual machines you can use to access Windows software on a Mac, or vice versa, or even social scams that redirect you from the website you want into one that looks just like the one you want. In this case, the hijacking is a way to suppress the expression of harmful genes. What is mRNA used for? In 2018, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, FDA, approved one of the very first RNA mechanism drugs. It's for hereditary transthyretin-mediated amyloidosis, HATTER, which is a rare but devastating genetic disorder that causes plaque to accumulate in the body. Other genetic diseases cause similar buildup of similar kinds of plaque with amyloid or amyloidosis in their names as well, and the mechanism is similar across many of these diseases. Under normal circumstances, the liver produces a protein called transthyretin, TTR, which is used to transport vitamin A and a thyroid-binding protein in the body. The FDA explains, people with HATTR have a mutation in the gene for TTR, which means that the TTR protein manufactured by the liver is defective and unstable. This is exactly where a therapeutic RNA steps in. It effectively replaces a corrupt file in the DNA and ensures the subsequent TTR proteins are less likely to be unstable and harm the body. That sounds incredible, but of course it's also complicated, the FDA explains. These drugs also require delivery systems such as a lipid nanoparticle to get the drugs to specific target tissues. This carrier molecule can trigger its own immune response. Therefore, before taking the RNA drug, which is administered through an intravenous infusion, patients must take a steroid, acetaminophen, and an antihistamine to decrease the chance of having immune reactions. Patients with HATTR face grim statistics that mean even heavy preparation trade-offs can be worthwhile in exchange for improved outcomes. Both Pfizer and Moderna have mRNA-based vaccines nearing the very end of clinical development and testing. There's no reason to think mRNA is the only kind of vaccine option. It's just the fastest in a particular situation. With a dozen other options in advanced development around the world, and it's true that no mRNA vaccine has ever been made to market, but some have tried, These will be the first to be approved if they are. Moderna and BioNTech each design a tiny snip of genetic code that could be deployed into cells to stimulate a coronavirus immune response. Stat reports, the two vaccines differ in their chemical structures, how the substances are made, and how they deliver mRNA into cells. Both vaccines require two shots a few weeks apart. BioNTech is Pfizer's technical partner for developing this vaccine. Immune response is genetically encoded in some ways, which means where DNA doesn't have a read-only installer for COVID-19 response, synthetic mRNA can try to trick the body into manufacturing these responses anyway. The Atlantic's Sarah Zhang explains why this mechanism is so clever, if indeed it works as designed. We humans don't need to intellectually work out how to make viruses. Our bodies are already very, very good at incubating them. When the coronavirus infects us, it hijacks our cellular machinery, turn our cells into miniature factories that can churn out infectious viruses. The mRNA vaccine makes this vulnerability into a strength. What if we can trick our own cells into making just one individually harmless, though very recognizable, viral protein? The coronavirus's spike protein fits this description, and the instructions for making it can be encoded into genetic material called mRNA. Basically, the vaccine puts up a wanted poster for a specific silhouette of viral agent. And that means your body can ramp up production of a response to that shape and feel of the virus. You can see how this mechanism has the same spirit of even the oldest kinds of killed virus vaccines, where introducing something your body can familiarize itself with leads to a more robust immune response later. And we're just extraordinarily lucky that the coronavirus has a spike protein on which we can hang our mRNA hats. So what's the catch? If mRNA is so great, has spectacular initial findings for effectiveness at preventing transmission of COVID-19, and works so cleverly, then why are we hesitating? Well, how something performs in a clinical trial where circumstances are closely controlled doesn't show all the size of its use in real life. Instead, specially prepared molecules will need to be climate controlled, shipped around the world, handled and stored with care, and administered by healthcare workers of many kinds. These healthcare workers are highly skilled and experienced, but mRNA in this fragile form is just something new that will have growing pains. Hospitals are stretched so thin they are running out of workers in addition to beds, and when the production is expected to be about 25 million doses at first, what if even as many as 10% of them are lost due to problems in the supply or shipping chain? These are just some of the many unanswered questions, and there's lots of pressure to get them right. That article was Everything You Need to Know About mRNA, the COVID-19 Vaccine's Secret Weapon, by Carolyn Delbert. The next article is Here's When the COVID-19 Vaccine Will Be Released to the Public According to Doctors, by Corin Miller. Pfizer and Moderna have reported separate vaccine candidates that are more than 90% effective at preventing COVID-19 infection in people who participated in phase 3 clinical trials. Millions of doses of both vaccines could be produced by the end of 2020. Doctors explained the logistics of distributing a COVID-19 vaccine nationally, who will be the first to receive it, and when to expect availability. There has been huge progress in the development of a COVID-19 vaccine. Pfizer, a biopharmaceutical company, revealed on November 9th that its vaccine candidate is more than 90% effective at preventing COVID-19 in people who received the vaccine as part of a stage 3 clinical trial. A week later, on November 16th, biotechnology company Moderna shared that its vaccine candidate is nearly 95% effective at preventing COVID-19. The news is promising, especially as novel coronavirus infections continue to hit all-time highs in the U.S. But it raises a major question. When will COVID-19 vaccine actually be distributed? And who will receive it first? There are no dates set in stone at the moment, but experts say the vaccine will start to roll out sooner than most people realize. Here's everything we know so far. First, what should I know about the Pfizer and Moderna COVID-19 vaccines? Pfizer shared in early November that its candidate vaccine was more than 90% effective in keeping people in phase 3 clinical trials safe from COVID-19 infection. Pfizer study, which has enrolled 43,538 participants, has reported no serious side effects or safety concerns. The vaccine uses a new technology called messenger RNA, mRNA, to create an immune response in people after they receive two doses of the vaccine. Pfizer says that it should be able to make up to 50 million doses in 2020 and up to 1.3 million doses in 2021. Moderna's vaccine is also in a phase 3 clinical trial, and its early data is even more promising. The clinical trial, known as the COVE study, enrolled more than 30,000 people in the U.S. and found that the vaccine was 94.5% effective at preventing COVID-19 infection in those who received two doses. Like the Pfizer vaccine, the Moderna candidate uses mRNA to create an immune response, and there are no reported safety concerns. Important to note, both vaccines cannot infect someone or make them sick with COVID-19. Moderna says it can produce 20 million doses of its vaccine by the end of 2020 and 500 million to 1 billion doses globally in 2021. How will a COVID-19 vaccine be handled and distributed? There are major logistical challenges in getting the vaccine distributed to every part of the country and the world, says infectious disease expert Amish Adeya, MD, senior scholar at the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security. This includes equitable distribution and making sure that diverse populations can be reached. First, the vaccine has to be manufactured and then shipped to locations that have signed up to receive it. The Pfizer vaccine requires a special shipping and handling because it has to be kept very, very cold, explains William Schaffner, MD, an infectious disease specialist and professor at the Vanderbilt University School of Medicine. It won't go to your average doctor's office or pharmacy. They won't be able to store it. Instead, it will be distributed to locations with specialty storage containers. These need to be kept at minus 70 degrees Celsius, which is colder than the winter in Antarctica, NPR reports. The Moderna vaccine, however, seems as if it will be handled the way normal vaccines are handled, Dr. Schaffner says. That means it can be shipped on dry ice and stored in regular freezer temperatures, minus 20 degrees Celsius, in pharmacies and doctor's offices. The vaccine will be free, he notes, because it was funded by taxpayer dollars. However, there may be administration costs for providers like doctor's offices and pharmacies. It's unclear at this point if insurance companies will cover that. That concludes today's reading for December 22nd, 2020's episode of Prevention Magazine. This has been Herbert Gilmore for the Georgia Radio Reading Service. Thank you for listening to GARS.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, the Center Solutions Podcast, followed by the Noon Book Hour at 12.
This is a Recording Library of West Texas Community Update.
Starbright Village. Despite a nearly year-long pandemic, the trees will twinkle, the lights will shine brightly, and baby Jesus will warmly greet visitors as the annual Starbright Village kicks off with a virtual tree lighting ceremony December 3rd. The popular holiday attraction, which draws more than 200,000 visitors every year, will be on display through January 1st.
Now airing on the Noon Book Hour, The Clock Strikes 12 by Patricia Wentworth. When a British industrialist is murdered on New Year's Eve, his wealthy family members are the prime suspects. Though they share a manor house, the Paradines are not close, and their patriarch does nothing to discourage the petty jealousies that divide them. A cold figure, James Paradine prefers work to his relations, but on New Year's Eve, he convenes the household. Valuable plans have been stolen from his office, and only one person could be to blame. He knows the culprit's name and gives the thief until midnight to come forward. By midnight, James Paradine is dead. Was it the thief who killed him, or could it have been someone else acting on different motives entirely? The local constables are baffled, and it is left to Detective Maud Silver to out the murderer. The Clock Strikes 12 by Patricia Wentworth, weekdays at noon and 2 a.m. on Recording Library of West Texas Radio.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 62 and mostly cloudy. Tonight, a few showers with a low in the mid-50s. Then tomorrow, mostly cloudy with a high in the upper 40s. Tomorrow night, snow showers with a low in the low 30s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 11 a.m.
Hello and welcome to the Women's Hour. I'm Marianne. Thank you for joining me. Beginning today with glamour. 14 New Year superstitions for good luck. We could all use that good energy. By Michela Ore. At last, 2020 is winding down. With so much out of our control and 2021 still uncertain, no wonder people want to brush up on superstitions to help ring in the new year right. For the foodies in the room, be sure to clear out those turkey leftovers and opt out of getting party wings for any New Year's Eve dinner you're prepping, because eating a winged animal on that night might just cause the good luck approaching you to fly the opposite way. If you're looking for recipes, go for the peas, black-eyed peas.